Good afternoon. Today is Friday, August the 1st. How'd that happen? 213th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Eureka's city manager, Greg Sparks. Hey, guy.
How's it going?
Whoa, you're wearing the pony shirt. Wow.
Just kind of Friday casual.
Well, it kind of goes with the big balloon that you have in your hand also.
Big balloon.
This afternoon, we'll kick around a couple different things. Obviously, we're in the middle of summertime, the new fiscal year. We heard from Regan Candelaria on Tuesday about what their budget looks like. We'll talk a little bit about what Eureka's budget looks like, and I'm sure that there's all kinds of updates that Mr. Sparks is just anxious to tell us about.
There's just nothing more exciting than municipal budgeting.
You know, and we'll peek with that when we come back.
Okay.
From your trip to Latin America, you are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. 1790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Greg Sparks. But before we do, our quote this afternoon, let's see if we can find something. Oh, you want a quote about quotations?
Go for it.
That almost sounds redundant, doesn't it? Okay, here we go. From Dorothy Sayers, 1932. I have a quotation for everything. It saves original thinking. Yeah, ain't that the truth? Boy. So what was the budget process like? Last month it was still a little too new for everybody to kind of figure out. For Eureka, were you guys able to bring it in?
We were, and it was pretty difficult. We end up with kind of a short time frame for doing that. A number of the kind of departmental budget decisions were waiting until I came on board. And so I think that put us a little bit behind timeline-wise. And so really about my second week on the job, started having those departmental budget reviews. And finance was still putting together final numbers on revenues. And when it all kind of came together, where we're at was we had some significant reductions that we were going to have to take care of in order to give council a balanced budget.
So what is?
When I say a lot,
what kind of numbers?
It was close to $4 million that had to be reduced.
That's a significant
That was, and so that's why we were, and had really impact across all departments. You know, I think for most part for the last several years, we've certainly tried to not do any reductions to public safety. We had to do some this time, but it did not result in the kind of reductions you saw a few years back. That since the genesis for Measure O, when the city was at the point of cutting, I think it was 13 positions in public safety, 9 in the police department, 4 in the fire department.
Now, Greg, was the $4 million real $4 million or government $4 million?
You know, I know how you say. I would call it real $4 million, particularly because in Eureka we've had basically no reserves. I mean, there's times when you can make reductions, but you know you're pulling from reserves here, or it's you're overinflating something else. No, I would call this kind of real money that we had to deal with.
I think a lot of us, we kind of get lost in the weeds when we hear reduction.
Mm-hmm.
We froze 4 positions. Wait a minute. You didn't have those filled. You didn't lose anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an extension of what current reality is. So that's not
right.
Really a loss. That's just what is.
Yeah.
So the $4 million was really cuts into systems and programs and departments.
There were, and certainly some of that is you have an unfilled position, a position that has been allocated for the year that's maybe currently unfilled that you're not filling. So in a sense, you're not eliminating a person's job at that point. But we did eliminate some jobs as part of this, and before the council on this coming Tuesday night, we have we're taking to them some early retirement incentive positions, and that will impact nine employees, eight that will take the PERS early retirement, and one doing a health insurance retirement benefit, and in some of these cases, we will not be refilling the position. Others will be refilling position, but at a lower level position.
Well, sure, you get rid of a gray hair.
Yes.
And replace it with some young buck. Yeah. I mean, it's going to save some money.
Well, and it's not even, but a lot of times it's even taking the position down from a senior level engineer position to a entry level.
Well, it's just cop. Instead of a lieutenant, it gets bumped down to a sergeant or something.
That type of thing. So. We will see some significant savings from these early retirement incentives that we're taking to council.
Now, how much is PERS costing the city each year?
The
retirement program for folks.
Yeah, you know, and of course, I do not have a budget. It's the thing is, both in California and many other states, because they're defined benefit plans, and when the recession hit, most of them weren't 100% funded to begin with. The employer share went up. Some areas, employee shares also went up. But predominantly, the employer share went up. And so, and in particularly in police and fire benefit programs that have an even better percentage earlier retirement, I think we're over 40%. In terms of
the total budget,
well, in terms of the salary of a police or fireman, over 40, I think it's 42% is now on their PERS benefit. So that's a significant, really kind of non-sustainable kind of number long term. Now, certainly what we've seen in California the last few years is that they have changed the system for new employees coming in.
Yeah, the new guys,
such as myself. Yeah, I got to save the city a little money. And, So that's an improvement, and other states have done similar things, but it takes a long time to see the benefit from that. As you start, you know, the employees need to move through the system in order for that to see those savings.
Or retirees have to move through
that's
their life cycle. Is
yes.
that kind of a fancy way
yes.
of saying? Yeah.
I just don't want to put that in terms of, you know, that of an age discrimination, because on the other end, you know, you risk losing some, you know, excellent institutional knowledge, and so there's always that thing that you want to be careful about.
But if you're doing it systemically,
yeah,
you're kind of protected on that stuff.
Yes,
yeah,
as much as you can,
unless you're gray hair. It's 3:19.
Nearly half a century in the news business should count for something. I'm Dave Silverbrand, and that's how long I've been watching the world go by. Now it's time to put it in perspective. Join me each weekday for a look at local news and views and what they mean to you from my perspective. Dave's Take Two on KWSW three times each day during the 8, noon, and 5 o'clock hours. Or read them on our website, kwsw980.com.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Greg Sparks. Greg, the concept of early retirement is an intriguing one. How does the company, the city, handle early retirement so that you don't have this huge institutional knowledge drain? You know, if two of those folks are from the same department, okay, whoops.
Yeah.
But at the other in the other hand, you're looking for relatively quick kill on cost savings. How do you equate that or balance that thing out so you're not really hindering yourself, but you're still able to keep the doors open?
With this the California public employment retirement system benefit, we open up a window of time, and most all these who are using the CalPERS will be going at the end of the year, so around December.
Oh, the calendar year would be when they would go out anyway?
Yeah. So that gives us, in a sense, you know, 5 months or so at least to either for training of other employees or to hire replacements in some of those cases. The other thing, though, we evaluated is this a position that we can do without? And we had to deny some positions. You know, we can't eliminate that position. It's great that you'd like to go and retire and help us out, but that is we can't just part of the thing with the CalPERS retirement, we have to eliminate the position for a period of time. So in some cases—
Oh, really? To do the parachute, you have to do that?
Yes, we do. So it's not always practical to allow early retirement for every position. So that was evaluated on a kind of a department-by-department basis.
Everybody gets to go on vacation except for—
Yeah, and that's that can be a tough message to deliver with employees as well.
Particularly if you've got somebody who wouldn't mind leaving.
Yes, yeah.
So you have to close it for a year. Can you reopen it then?
You know, typically what we, on these ones that we are taking to council for approval, we've made some determination that, we can do without that level position and that we can hire that back at a different position, a lower level position.
Or different job functions.
A little different job function. May not have been exactly what we wanted, but we need to do some things in order to drive the cost down, and that's one of the things we can do.
So what is guy or gal on the street going to see as a difference? I know the goal is not to.
You know, that's always my goal, is that from a city government standpoint, we will try to deliver the best services we can with the people we have, with the resources we have. And I think for the most part, I don't think citizens will see a change in service level from these retirement positions. So I think we will be able to handle those very well within the organization.
Other than that, with the budget, what were the other areas that helped you shore up that $4 million?
You know, some of it, we also did those some fee increases in some areas. So it wasn't strictly reductions. I mean, we do look at where we have fees for service, where it makes sense to raise some fees. So you take the zoo, for example. You know, the zoo receives about $750,000 a year in kind of general fund subsidy, tax subsidy. But we increased zoo fees for this next year. And we're also projecting higher zoo attendance with the new Watershed Heroes exhibit. So actually for this next year, our amount of subsidy to the zoo actually went down slightly, even though the zoo budget went up. Amount of subsidy to it went down.
What is the Watershed Heroes?
That's the exhibit we received grant funding for, which has the eagle aviary, the river otter, and now I forgot what the third one is. It's the
lumberjack.
that sounds like a good guess, wasn't that. But I'll think of it later.
That's all right.
It's really exciting. It's about I think a $4.5 million grant project, and then the Zoo Foundation raising the additional local funds for it, and they've been working hard doing that and bringing money in. So really helps to keep the zoo, in a sense, kind of current and provides a great educational component.
So the zoo fees went up a little bit. Are we going to see anything in either water, sewer, utilities? Are we going to see any of those types of things also bump?
No, not at this time. Again, we have to be real careful on raising water and sewer rates, going back to Prop 218. Have to be able to justify those, but
California numbers now.
You know, I did some research on that before I came here, so there's certain props you better be familiar with besides Prop 13. So that would certainly 218 is one of them.
So a little here, a little there, and that's kind of how you cobbled it together?
That's about right. And police and fire were certainly looking to expand, had some areas where they're looking to expand. We had to cut those back. It's very frustrating, I know, for the fire chief that, I'll tell you, two of our fire stations, I've got to say, they're about the worst stations I've ever been in. I mean, We really have been a lack of investment. We've got a, unfortunately, we've got a roof on one that's leaking, but it has asbestos, you know, in the roof shingles. So that it's a very expensive removal of those shingles. You know, normally you'd look at a roof like that and say, well, we'll be able to do that for $15,000. Because of the asbestos, that makes it a $75,000 project. So you kind of keep putting
just
up.
Just have a fire sale.
You just keep putting up with a few of those issues. You know, a little while back at council meeting.
We'll talk about that one.
We will.
Because we got council meeting stuff to talk about.
Okay.
It's 3:30.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540227, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Greg Sparks, City Manager for Eureka. Greg, before the break, you were talking a little bit about some of the different challenges that are out there and trying to figure out with the fire stations how to either stretch budgets or do something, or along with Chief Ken, figure out some solutions. Are there any?
Well, I think one of the things that they will be looking at is, you know, is the fire station configurations, where it makes sense to have fire stations based on service calls, and whether or not there's one that can be, you know, taken out of service at some point. You know, those would be decisions that, you know, made by the Joint Powers Authority as they move through. You know, the other thing is the chief and I were talking about this just the other day in terms as the department takes on more responsibility for advanced life saving, and you're seeing more of that trend in fire service around the country, and how that will basically kind of impact the whole fire service model in the next few years. I think it's a kind of an important community service, and I think it's one that we're finding the community is responding well to.
It'll be interesting to see what and how calls for service change.
Yes.
I mean, now that you're getting some of the goofiest, stupid calls. You know, why would you even think of calling a police or fire guy to do that? But people do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if part of this equation for you, for Ken or for Andy or any fire or police station, is an awareness by the community that it serves of what they should be doing and what they shouldn't be doing. Things you should call for and things you shouldn't be calling for. And really beat that into people's heads, because it seems like that's what's needed sometimes.
Yeah, I think there probably is an educational effort that's needed in terms of what's kind of an appropriate call for service, because, yeah, they've got plenty to do quite in dealing with both the fires that happen here, and actually quite a pretty high level of fires that they're dealing with.
Did they ever find the fire yesterday?
You know, I haven't heard of it. I
was talking to a buddy, and Wednesday rather. I was going out Gentoli Lane and following one of Humboldt Bay's finest who was taking somebody home during his lunch break kind of thing. I said, so how's it going? He said, well, okay, except we can't find one fire. I said, how's a fire guy lose a fire? It was in one of the green belt areas, and they hadn't been able to pin it down yet. So I was wondering if you had found the missing fire.
No, I had not heard about the missing fire.
Okay. So how do you drive some of that stuff home that, okay, we got to do things differently, and we're not going to be able to do everything that you want us to. Sorry.
You know, I think some of that is taking that message out on kind of almost a neighborhood-by-neighborhood basis. I mean, sure, there's things we can do on the website, and there's things we can do on the radio and do on TV and the newspaper, but a lot of times it's a matter of kind of getting out in the neighborhoods and kind of having that little more one-on-one education with people. So I think that's something we will want to be doing more of. I know I've been out to when I was at a neighborhood watch meeting last week, and it actually started off with kind of a whole kind of an emergency management piece. We had a couple of the fire volunteer types there to kind of talk about, you know, what to do in, you know, tsunami and these other type of things, that natural hazards that we deal with. So important to keep getting that message out to the public, and you never stop. It's you keep educating and re-educating.
That's probably one of the more frustrating things, at least it would be for me. Okay, we've talked about it for 5 years. That's enough.
Right, right.
Nah, you got new people moving in, new situations, new circumstances, all that kind of stuff. And you wonder, is this just getting so repetitive, but not for the folks that haven't heard it before?
No, and we do have, I think, enough, like say, turnover. Not everyone has been here for multi-generations as you have.
Yeah, or weeks or days, as others in the studio have.
Yeah.
But it's always been interesting for me to recognize that need is there, but it's still, it becomes a second tier effort when you're responding to medical aids.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's like the inspections of the businesses for the sprinklers. Yeah, everybody'd love that to be top priority because that's a preventative thing. But when you're running from fire to fire, it's kind of tough to do the other one on an equal basis.
Right. You know, I was at the McDonald's grand opening today and had a chance to talk to the builder. You know, they did that project, and I think it's 72 days from demolition to...
Yeah, how did that happen?
You know, I was asked, did we have any issues from a building inspection standpoint? And both from our building official and from the builder said, no, you know, that we worked well with them. They knew what they needed to do. It's a company that's built a lot of McDonald's, so they weren't reinventing the wheel on this.
One-trick pony, and they'd been to many rodeos.
Yes, that's right. And
cool. But they didn't run into anything negative out of the city.
That's good to hear.
That's got to be, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and aren't they within the coastal zone?
Yeah, I think that would be.
That's even more intriguing than 72 days, just 2 months.
Yeah, that's through demolition to opening the doors.
The drive-thru works, by the way.
Yeah.
Thought I'd let you know.
Okay.
KINS News and Information Time, 3:42. We'll be back with more from Greg Sparks.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time, 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Greg Sparks. Next week, you got your shopping cart opportunity.
Yes, we talked about that last month.
Think that's a great, wonderful example of plagiarism. Way to go.
And so we do have it on for this council agenda for first reading. You know, we took this out to the large, big box retailers. They've had it for about 30 days. We didn't get any comments back from them, so either
no blowback at all.
No, which I mean, we'll see if we do, but I think probably for the most part they've dealt with this in some other cities, so hopefully that this is at least one more enforcement arrow in our quiver kind of a deal for dealing with some of these issues.
So it gets exposed Tuesday.
Yes.
And then 2 weeks later, a second exposure?
Yes.
Or reading or whatever the technical phrase is.
Yeah, first reading, second reading.
When does it get implemented?
Then it's after it's been published. So we'll have it. It'll be ready to go. This really gets us into fall, September.
So you had the 5th, the 19th, and then sometime in September?
Yep, 30 days, I think it is. So.
Okay, well, I'll say October 1, then the police are able to start using that as a tool.
Yes.
What do you think is going to happen? Do you think that there will be a significant impact?
Yeah, it's hard to know because we've all seen that you've got the shopping carts, which can handle a lot of stuff. The other night I was walking in the neighborhood and heard the squeaky wheel, and it was the baby stroller that was kind of loaded. So, you know, do we have to do a baby stroller ordinance next?
But it was there was no baby involved.
I'm pretty sure there's no baby involved.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't use a baby stroller without a baby. We may have to do something like that.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, there's lots of creativity in certain situations.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that'll be interesting.
You know, the other thing we're trying to deal with is bicyclists who go the wrong way. One thing we're finding with some of the population out there is they'll get a one-way street. They'll be going the opposite way, and
these aren't the kids on the Schwinn's.
No, this isn't the kids on the Schwinn's. And as a driver, you're looking the one way for the traffic, not expecting a bicyclist with a trash bag being carried going the other way.
Oh, it's the adult male bike rider.
That might be a good, accurate way of putting that. So
there's got to be an acronym in there somewhere.
So we are looking to how to, again, address that issue as well, because it has resulted in, auto and bicycle collisions and damage. And
some of these guys come smoking through really fast, and it's a way of
transporting stolen property, and we really want to try to get at those kind of issues.
Oh, you know, adult male bike rider. But you could almost call it Amber, couldn't you?
We'll have an Amber alert.
Yeah. Not to denigrate what the Highway Patrol has got, but yeah, it's almost there, isn't it? I'll have to work on that one.
Okay.
But now I'm ready for you next time. don't tell Mills. I want a shot at him on Monday with that one.
You can do that.
An Amber alert, and he'll look at me. Oh, yeah. What about the goofy hotels that are along Broadway? Is there any movement? There's history. There's momentum of Eureka doing that in the past.
Yes.
Condemnation, knocking these things down. Does that make sense or not?
You know, the city passed an ordinance this last year to deal with motels where we get multiple calls for service to. And that review period is coming up, and we will be kind of seriously looking at those that have been problem motels and take that back to city council on enforcement action.
So there may be something coming up halfway quickly.
Yes, yeah, there could be.
Good. It'd be nice to see mattresses back inside the rooms. As an example, just one example.
Well,
you don't have to respond.
Right. There is an expectation that motels operate in a manner that aren't requiring a great number of police calls.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Brian.
We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Greg Sparks. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug somebody else. See you tomorrow morning.